Well, which one is on the board?
44.
Adyapa, yeah? Adyapa Bachas?
Yes.
Adyapi,
Bachas,
Patayas,
Tapo,
Vidya,
Samadhibi,
Pashanto, Vati,
Na,
Pashanti, Pashantam,
Parameshwaram,
Adyapi, Bachas, Adyapi vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhi, pashanto pina pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram, adyapi vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhi. Pashanto pina pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram, adyapi vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhibhi, pashanto pina pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram. Vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhi, pashanto pina pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram, adyapi vachas patayas. Tapo vidya samadhi, pashanto pina pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram, adyapi vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhi, pashanto pina pashanti, Pashantam Parameshwaram. Adyapi vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhi, pashanto pina pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram. Adyapi vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhi, pashanto pina pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram, adyapi vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhi, pashanto api pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram, adyapi vachas patayas, tapo vidya samadhi, pashanto pina pashanti, pashantam parameshwaram. Adya api.
Adya api.
Up to date. Vacha
Pataya.
Masters of speaking. Tapaha. Austerities. Vidya. Knowledge. Samadhi B. By meditation. Pashanta. Observing. Api. Although. Na Pashanti. Do not observe. Pashantam. The one who sees. Param Ishvaram. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace by Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The most powerful Lord Brahma, the father of all progenitors, Lord Shiva, Manu, Daksha, and the other rulers of humankind, the four saintly first-class brahmacharis, headed by Shanaka and Sanatan, the great sages, Marichi, Aitri, Angira, Pulastya, Palaha, Kratu, Brigu, and Vashishtha, and my humble self, Narad, we are all stalwart brahmanas who can speak authoritatively on Vedic literatures. We are very powerful because of austerities, meditation, and education. Nonetheless, even after inquiring about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom we always see, we do not know perfectly about Him. Please repeat. The most powerful Lord Brahma,
the most powerful Lord Brahma,
the father of all progenitors,
the father of all
progenitors, Lord Shiva,
Lord Shiva,
Manu,
Manu,
Daksha,
Daksha,
and other rulers of mankind, the four saintly first-class brahmacharis, headed by Shanaka and Sanatan, the great sages Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Briku, and Vashishtha, and my humble self, Narada, are all stalwart brahmanas who can speak authoritatively on Vedic literature. We are very powerful because of austerities, meditation, and education. Nonetheless, even after inquiring about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom we always see, we do not know perfectly about Him. Purport. According to the foolish Darwinian theory of anthropologists, it is said that 40,000 years ago, Homo sapiens had not appeared on this planet, because the process of evolution has not reached that point. However, the Vedic literatures, the Puranas, the Mahabharat, relate human histories that extend millions and millions of years into the past. In the beginning of creation, there was a very intelligent personality, Lord Brahma, and from him emanated all the Manus and the Brahmacharis like Sanak and Sanatan, as well as Lord Shiva, the great sages, and Narada. All these personalities underwent great austerities and penances and thus became authorities in Vedic knowledge. Perfect knowledge for human beings, as well as for all living entities, is contained in the Vedas. All the above-mentioned great personalities are not only powerful, being cognizant of past, present, and future, but are also devotees. Still, in spite of their great education in knowledge, and despite their meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, they cannot actually understand the perfection of the living entity's relationship with Lord Vishnu. This means that these personalities are still limited as far as their knowledge of the unlimited is concerned. The conclusion is that simply by advancing one's knowledge, one cannot be accepted as an expert in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can be understood not by advanced knowledge, but by pure devotional service, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 1855, Bhaktimam abhijananti yavanyaschasmi tatvata. Unless one takes to pure devotional, transcendental devotional service, he cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in truth. Everyone has some imperfect ideas about the Lord. The so-called scientists and philosophical speculators are unable to understand the Supreme by virtue of their knowledge. Knowledge is not perfect unless one comes to the platform of devotional service. This is confirmed by the Vedic version, Atapiti deva padambu jadvaya prasada leshanu gurahita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahimo na chanyeko pi chiram chinvam, from Bhagavatam 10.14.29. The speculators, the jnanis, go on speculating about the Supreme Person of Godhead for many, many hundreds of thousands of years. But unless one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot understand his supreme glories. All the great sages mentioned here in this verse had their planets near Brahmaloka. The planets where Lord Brahma resides, along with the four great sages, Shanaka, Shanatan, Shanandana, and Shanakumara, these sages reside in different stars known as the southern stars, which circle the pole star. The pole star is called Dhruvaloka. It's the pivot of the universe, and all the planets move around this pole star. All the stars are planets, as far as we can see within this one universe. According to Western theory, all the stars are different suns. But according to the Vedic information, there is only one sun within this universe. And the so-called stars are but different planets. Besides this universe, there are many millions of other universes. And each of them contains similar, innumerable stars and planets. Om Agyanti Midam Dasya Jananjanan Shalakayo Takshuram Militandina Tasmayashi Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shivashari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Ram Hare Hare. So in this verse and purport, Srila Prabhupada is practically describing the situation of the universe. In one purport, he's practically describing everything about the maintenance and the purpose of the universe. Whereas he points out modern scientists, they're going on speculating year after year, they'll go on there forever speculating, still they won't be able to fully comprehend the universe, what to speak of beyond the universe. So, here it's speaking about all these different sages here who are in charge of the universal management. So it's very well planned out by the Lord. Om Punam. He's always perfect and complete. So when he does something, it's very perfect. He creates this universe, and the way he manages it is perfect. The way he destroys it is perfect. The way he creates it is perfect. So here is a description of the universe, how the pole star, we see what we call the north star, that's the pivot, and the Shishumara, it's called the Shishumara, like a dolphin shaped body of planets and stars, etc. And they simply revolve around the pole star, the Dhruva Loka, it's fixed. So here, the scientists have to discover that. Yet here, Prabhupada and Srila Bhagavatam is talking about these things, as Prabhupada says, millions of years ago. When before humans even existed, according to the modern anthropologists, they started existing later on as the evolution progressed, Darwin's evolutionary theory. But Prabhupada said, this information is coming from millions and millions of years ago. So, all of these great sages they have a position in this universe. Be like Brahma and all the progenitors, Lord Shiva, Manu, Daksha, etc. They have their service of making sure everything is going nicely in the universe. They're progenitors of the universe. And so they have to make that maintenance go nicely. And the other sages here, Marichiya, Triangiri, Pulasta, Pulaha, Kratu, Brigu, Bisista, and my humble self, Narad, because Narad is kind of really special. But they're all stalwart Brahmanas, they're all fully conversant with the Vedic knowledge. And they're using this knowledge. We're accepting this knowledge. All these great sages mentioned it. You ask anybody born in India, then they will have a Gotra or a family lineage. They have a sage, one of these sages, or there's many sages, and that knowledge is coming from that sage, the system of knowledge. It has a sage behind it who generally propounded that philosophy in the beginning. So these sages, they pass down this knowledge, and when you're born in a certain family, then you have a certain family line, or what we call Gotra. Those who get initiated into the Vaishnava Sampradaya, we get the Achyuta Gotra. Achyuta is Krishna, because we're in Krishna's family, and we're in Krishna's lineage. Achyuta is the infallible Lord. But generally, in general society, Vedic society, then each family will have their particular sage, and they will use his teachings that will be passed down, that will be like the family teachings, that will be the standard knowledge for that family, that generation, in every generation, but that particular anybody coming in that line, they will utilize that knowledge. And so you get these different classes in society and different clans and things like that, especially in India. Because they're giving knowledge, and then the descendants, they take that knowledge, then you're indebted. You become indebted to them. Because you're receiving that knowledge from them, you have to repay that debt. It's called Rini. Rini means debtor. When you are born, you're a debtor. You have six debts to pay back. From the sages, from your mother and father who gave you the body, from the demigods who give the light and everything, from government who give you protection, make roads, the sages. So like that, you have six kinds of debts, and you have to pay it off. This is human society. You're born a debtor, so now you've got to pay it off. It's called Rini and Kinkara. Rini is the debtor. The problem here, Gopal Bhatta Goswami points out in his Sakriya Sarpitika, the problem is that you have to pay off the sages, you have to pay off the demigods, etc. You have to pay off the forefathers. So you have to offer them some worship. The problem is, you worship the different demigods and everything, and the pitris, the forefathers. Then you become their servant, Kinkara. And so then you've got to pay it back. So by becoming paying off your debts to the demigods and forefathers, and worshipping and honoring the forefathers and the demigods, what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? If you worship the demigods, you will go to the demigods. If you worship the pitras, you will go to Pitraloka. So, although you're doing your duty properly, according to paying off your debts, you're a debtor, but by paying off your debts, become a kinnara, a servant. So therefore you take your birth in Devaloka or Pitriloka again. So it's not really solving the problem. You're paying off your debts, but still you're going to take another birth with the Devatas or the Pitras, etc. like that. But anyway, that's the material world is designed for people who want to enjoy it. So this is the best way to do it, to pay off your debts. If you want to enjoy the world, pay off your debts, because then you become free from sin. The symptom of happiness. Goodness means you become happy. Because you want to stay here, then this is how to do it. But of course, you become a servant and you've got to become a demigod or go to Pitriloka and things like that. But still, that's what you wanted. That's what the living entity wanted in the material. He wanted to become a deity. So a Vedic system is how you can enjoy best. You want to enjoy this world. But how you can enjoy best? By following the Vedic codes. But if you want to get out of the material world and go back to God, then that's another thing. But these great sages, although they're doing such fantastic work, as they point out here, still their conclusion is not perfect. Their knowledge is still not perfect. They still have further to go. Even though they're celebrated, we're reading about all the Bhagavatam, it's full of these sages. Practically they can appear anywhere and they in the universe they like and give so much knowledge. But it also has, as Prabhupada said, the knowledge is not perfect here. Because they do not understand. They do not actually understand perfection of living entities' relationship with Lord Vishnu. So this is the most important thing, to understand one's relationship with Krishna, then you can go back to Godhead. So this is the devotees can do this. This is the role of the bhaktas. They can come and give this information. But all the other sages, they're just giving more or less material education to be happy. But it keeps you in the cycle of birth and death. It's not really solving the big problem. But you are getting the experience of enjoying in higher planets and on a better scale than others in the mode of goodness, mostly. So you do get more enjoyment by following the Vedic codes, but still one can go further and get out of the material world, because we don't really belong here as enjoyers of this material world. But because we somehow now that we had this desire, then Krishna is fulfilling our desires. So he's created the whole universe and give us some instructions. Here's how to be happy. Be thou happy by this jagna, for it will bestow upon you all happiness. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he's encouraging, be happy by it. You do it. So you'll get all happiness. You also get birth and death. That's it. So still the soul is never going to be completely satisfied until he becomes situated in his eternal position of being the eternal servant of Krishna, so only the devotees can do this. So here the whole picture of the universal setup and the universal management and the different personalities who cater for your knowledge, who cater for your liberation. There's sages who cater for that. There's personalities who cater for your sense gratification. So there's a nice description in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. And it's the meditation, Dhyanam, Vrindavan Dhyanam on Krishna. And it's printed here in the Pantarajika Pradipa, the Didi Rashi book. And it's also, I think it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is instructing Uddhava about Didi Rashi. But anyway, it describes the Vrindavan Dham, how it's touchstone, and there's desire trees full of made of emeralds with diamond buds and ruby leaves, and it's on the jewel platform inlaid with jewels, and under the copper brick tree with this jewel platform and the Sringhasan, and there sits Mukunda, Krishna, very beautiful, deep as black lamp, like a monsoon cloud, abundant curling hair on his body with his luminous peacock feather, and so he gives a full description of all Krishna's beauty and everything. And then he gives a more description. This is the Jogpit. Jogpit means place of perfection. Here's the Jogpit. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the birthplace, so that's a place of perfection. Vrindavan has many Jogpits also. So this is the description of a Jogpit, the place of perfection. So here we, after describing Vrindavan and the copper picture trees and the jeweled platform and everything, how Krishna is sitting there, and he says Krishna is surrounded by cows with long slender tails. They approach him with an unsteady gait, for their udders are swollen with milk. Their large eyes become glued to the lotus face of the Lord, while half-chewed tender shoots of grass remain poised on the end of their teeth. The newborn calves remain motionless, their beauty enhanced by the milk foam flowing from their small lips and teeth, which they had so eagerly sucked at the full udders. They cock their little ears to hear the deep enchanting notes from his flute. The older calves, with colorful blankets around their throats and little horns emerging from their soft heads, raise their tails and butt each other playfully, and they gallop this way and that. And finally, they gather around the Lord. The massive bulls, laden with the burden of their huge humps, lowing deeply, approach him lazily. And when the liquid nectar from the flute enters their cocked ears, they flare their nostrils and tilt up their heads. The cowherd boys, similar to Krishna in character, blissful nature and activities, and dress, play sweet low melodies on their flutes and veenas. They sing graceful tunes with their arms extended. They dance very expertly. The babies, with lisping words on their mouths, tiger claws hanging around their necks, jingling bells attached to their ankles and fat bellies, also approach the Lord. The attractive cowherd girls, their waists marked with three lines, come forward, eager to serve him. They sway with the weight of their heavy, broad hips, and their head bows beneath the piles of abundant hair. The desire trees of their bodies, drenched with the nectar from his flute, sprout goosebumps, like flowers blooming on the vine. The ocean of prem in the gopis hearts expands due to the moonbeam's smile of Nanda's son. From his long bowed eyebrows he shoots sharp glances, a shower of deadly arrows of love that break the vulnerable points of the composture of the gopis. disturbed but unsubmitting, they tried to suppress the painful tremblings that began to afflict the parts of their bodies. But eager to drink the nectar of the incomparable form of Krishna, with half-closed, bashful eyes, they furtively glanced upon him and thus continued to float in the streams of prema. O Lord Krishna, a reservoir of pleasure is decorated with a garland of full-blown blue lotuses in the form of the gopis' dark, restless eyes, which fix themselves on his form, whose eyes, like a garland of love-hungry bees, madly drink the liquid honey of his all-attractive face. The gopas, gopis, and cows remain at some distance, while the devatas stand in front with Lord Brahma, Shiva, and Indra in the lead, reciting verses to attain material wealth, artha. To the right side stand the assembled munis, intent on fulfilling the codes of Dharma with Vedic knowledge. Behind Shanaka and the yogindras, wanting liberation, moksha, they remain in a state of samadhi. To the left, the yakshas, siddhas, gandhavas, vidyadharas, the charanaras with their wives, along with the kinaras and the best of the apasaras, in pursuit of karma, pleasure, they sing, dance, and play musical instruments. In the sky appears Narad Muni, as white as a conch, shining like the moon, a jasmine, and a lightning bolt. He is decorated with matted locks of reddish hair. Knowing all the conclusions of the scriptures, he serves Krishna's lotus feet with undeviating devotion. Having given up all material pleasures, he pleases the Lord by plucking his veena, which produces wonderful melodies arranged in skillful ragas. So here, because Narada is speaking it, he says, my humble self, Narada, he's counting himself amongst the sages, but actually he's much more than a sage. But anyway, in this description, it's the Jogpit. So we get a description of Vrindavan and the Jogpit, and the Kalpa Pariksha, and Krishna is sitting there, and then all of his different energies are around him. So this is a picture of God along with all of his energies. So that's why it's a meditational Jogpit. It's a place where we meditate on the Jogpit. the description of the cows and the little calves, how they're coming up, and ultimately they all come to Krishna and become fixed on Krishna. But these are all in Shantaras. Sometimes cows are in Vatsalaras because they give milk to Krishna. But generally, the animals are in Shantaras. And the small cowboys, well, they're all playing on flutes and things. So they're in Shakiras. The elderly gopis are there in Vatsalaras, and of course the young gopi girls who are unable to control themselves in the presence of Krishna, they're in the Madhujaras. And then you have the demigods in front, headed by Lord Brahma, Shiva, etc. So they're intent on the universal population and production, artha. We get these four principles, dharma, artha, karma, moksha. These are the progressive values in life. So artha, they're in desires, artha. We say money sometimes, or economic development, artha. So this is the demigods, like the big demigods, Brahma, Shiva, Daksha, and everything. They want to populate the universe. They want to make it prosperous. So the artas are represented there by the demons, and the mokshas, those are desires of liberation, represented by Shanaka, Shanata, and the four kumaras, because they were Brahmavadis previously. So their example is generally given when they talk about moksha. You have the kumaras, you have Sukadeva Goswami. He was liberated in the womb, he didn't bother to come out. So he's one of the examples of those who want moksha. Of course, they all became great devotees, but their examples were given. So they want moksha. So they're there also. And the Gandhavas, the Kinaras, the Chanaras, the Apsaras, the angels, they're all engaged in chanting, dancing, singing nice songs, and They're all beautiful. It was all karma, sense gratification. It's there if you want it. So everything is there. This picture is giving a description of the Lord and all of his energies together. And the Aoi is in the center of everything. And then it's also speaking of these great sages who are intent on establishing the codes of Dharma. So these are all these great sages. That's their position. My position, I'm establishing the codes of Dharma throughout the universe. They're so powerful. The Prabhupada said they have three colored yeah, they have no past, present, and future. Practice their knowledge is unlimited. But they are thinking that I'm doing really good service here. They're great, great sages and saints fixed in the mode of goodness, but they really think we're doing a great service for the universe by distributing this knowledge and maintaining everything. So they've got this, I guess, kind of a fatherly mood of the looking after all the children of the universe. And it's a very, very responsible position, and they're doing it. Intent on establishing the codes of Dharma in the material world, telling you how to live in this material world, how to follow the Vedic principles. But we know it's defective also. But even you get a position, you can become such a great sage in the universe. You can know past, present, and future. You know all the intricacies of Vedic Dharma. And you're establishing it. And you'll be quite, I mean, the desire of the living entities become Lord. We want everybody. That's a tendency, even in the animals, they want to become the Lord. So imagine getting a position like that. You're responsible for all humankind. You're up there, you know. Manu and all those big. You want to establish the codes of Dharma so the living entities can live happily and peaceably by following all these Vedic Dharmas. As peacefully you can get and as happy as you can get in the material world. But think of that position, having a position like that, how respected they are. They pop up, and when Krishna's performing his pastimes, they pop up all over the place in Krishna's book. So they're free, like to go anywhere and everywhere. But still, as it says, their knowledge is incomplete. They're still dealing with the material universe. They do not know what their relationship is with Krishna. So, this is the real understanding. This is the business of the bhaktas. When the pure devotee comes, he can give you actual, what is the valuable, most valuable knowledge. Of course, you have to have a desire not to stay in the material world also. But the we see that the all of these forms, all of these sages, although they live practically as long as Brahma, some of them, they even go up to Brahma Loka when there's a partial devastation of the universe. But actually, they're all temporary. All these forms are temporary. Even Brahma's form is temporary. What to speak of all the other great personalities in this universe. So it's designed like this by Krishna. So it's so perfectly, how everything is perfectly maintained and managed by Krishna. Simply to fill our desire, that's all. You're the cause of all this. All of this great universal structure, all of the management that goes on, all the great sages, you're the cause of it. Simply because you desire, your will is very strong. Krishna fulfills that desire. Gives you a play. You want to imitate being the control and enjoy. That's why this universe is existing. Otherwise, it has no meaning. It wouldn't exist. It's simply because of the living entity's desire to imitate Krishna that everything is being manifested like this. So here it says. Although they have such great education, they cannot actually understand the perfection of the living entity's relationship with Krishna. So this is the most important knowledge. We have to understand and establish our relationship with Krishna, because Nitya, Krishna Das. That is eternal. And all these other relationships, yeah, they're all temporary. Even you can, you can't go up to the great planets of the sages. Still it is temporary. So here, these people also see God. It says they see God. They perform sacrifice. Vishnu personally comes before them. He gives them instructions. They always pop up wherever Krishna is coming. They see God. It says here also, they see God, but still they're not understanding their eternal relationship with Krishna. So that means that it says their knowledge is still limited. So yeah, so what use is it having a great position in the universe if you do not know your eternal relationship with Krishna? So this is established by devotees, as Prabhupada quotes here from Bhakti. Bhakti mama jananti. I can be known by bhakti. Whereas the others, they can't know Krishna. They're all in pursuit, ultimately in pursuit of Krishna, but still they're not understanding their relationships with Krishna, because still they're attached to these positions. The apsara, they're attached to enjoyment. The yogendras, they're attached to liberation. The demigods, they're attached to the creation, maintenance. The sages, they're attached to establishing the codes of Dharma. So they become attached to these positions. So therefore they don't know Krishna properly. even though you want to, because of their attachment to their positions, it's very difficult. Even though they personally see him sometimes. But to understand their eternal relationship with him, that's not, that is for the devotees. And we see that the residents of Vrindavan, they don't even care to know Krishna's God. They just want to serve Krishna and love. They love Krishna, they just want to serve him and please him. So this is the beautiful position of Krishna in the spiritual world. Brahma is making the prayer, the 10th canto, because he says they don't know Krishna. They're all trying, but they do not know Krishna. Lord Brahma admits this in the Brahma Vimoha Lila, and it's such a beautiful prayer, and the scene is so beautiful. That there's Krishna standing there with a morsel of food in his hand. That Krishna, picturing Krishna book is so sweet. I think it was Jadarani probably, she really captured Krishna's innocence. He was just a little boy and he's standing there with the food in his hand, looking for his carbs. And the yogurt's trickling between his fingers. And Lord Brahma said, just become completely bewildered by him. And he's looking and saying that, he said, you look like an ordinary village boy looking for your car. It looks like you've got insufficient education being brought up in the village. He said, but there's so much difference between your body and mine. I cannot understand. I become bewildered about the difference. And actually, because Lord Brahma was saying that, how is Krishna God playing with all the boys? He can't be God. He's like an ordinary boy. Okay. So because he had that attitude, then Krishna played like an ordinary boy. I wish this funny man with five heads would stop talking. I want to go back with my friends and cows. Had they surrendered me, I reward them accordingly. So Brahma was thinking, Krishna's an ordinary little boy. So Krishna said, no, I'm an ordinary little boy. Where are my cows? I want to go back and play with my friends. I wish this man would stop talking. So this is the gift of the devotees. The pure devotees come here, they can give us the actual real meaning of the real purpose of life, which is not to remain in the material world. Even you may get that position of a great sage and stay for the duration of a universe, still have further to go. So this is what this process of bhakti, Krishna consciousness, is presenting to the world. What is lacking? Otherwise everything is complete. But one thing is incomplete. Lack of Krishna consciousness. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki, Samaveda Bhaktavinda ki jai, Nitai Go Premanandi. Any comment? Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Maybe I'll come a little bit to the front. I was wondering about the importance of education in our movement. Is it a danger to become caught up in all this beautiful knowledge and skills of Vedic wisdom and lose this Raj Bhakti aspect of simply chant and serve and maybe not so much worry about arranging one's life, varnashram and this and that? But it seems important nevertheless, because at least in my case, I know I might live another 50 years on this planet and I somehow have to maintain myself. But I'm afraid of training and education to some degree, because I can feel there is, like you were explaining in your lecture now, that we might miss the point if we become too qualified and, you know, erudite scholars and like that. Can you say something on how to find the balance?
Yeah, that what you were explaining in the beginning, that's ideal. We just engage in Krishna service with chant dance. That's ideal. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give that actually first. But if you can't do that, because like it's on this more spontaneous platform, if you can't do that, then you get the Panchrachiki rules and regulations, Vedi Sadhana Bhakti. So we do follow the rules and regulations, we do cultivate knowledge, etc. So Prabhupada said we follow both paths. It's path of Ragmarg, the spontaneous path, and it's a path of Sadhana Bhakti or Panchrachiki. So we have to follow both paths. Like our chanting, Bhagavatam, preaching, that's more Ragma. And the other rules, wake up early morning, take bath, go to Mangalati, all the rules for worshipping deity, you know, that's all Panchrachiki. So Prabhupada said we have to follow both. We, like a train is running on two tracks. But we can't jump over and think that we're on the right platform immediately. So we have to follow both. Keeping your eyes to spot the fences when they come, so you can pick out the weeds. But Mahaprabhu came primarily to give that Ragmarg. He wanted everyone, but if we can't take it, then you take the second best, that is following the Vedic Sadhana Bhakti system. And as you say, there is a great danger there also. There is danger. We've seen many devotees, even they become a little proficient in Sanskrit and things like that, and they feel a little bit better than everyone else, and somehow or another they're such great scholars, they think that, you know, they can, someone else is better than Prabhupada. They leave Prabhupada and go because of their intellectual understanding. So there is danger. It says in the 11th canto, although yukta vairagya, knowledge and renunciation, these are emphasized a lot and practiced by all kinds of transcendentalists. He says for the devotee, he's not pretty much interested in this. Whereas you find out most of our teachings in Gita, and it's all knowledge, its renunciation. So much is being emphasized. But for a devotee who's actually attained the goal, then there's not much meaning in the knowledge and renunciation, because yeah, he's feeling attraction for Krishna. But if you haven't got that attraction, then you're obligated to follow the different rules and regulations of the Vedic sadhana bhakti.
How can we cultivate knowledge as a service with humility?
Cultivate knowledge, service, and humility. You cultivate knowledge by reading Prabhupada's books, studying the purports. You study the purport, see what Prabhupada's saying there. You should go deep. So knowledge is there, but we want knowledge from a devotee. We hear knowledge from, otherwise we may get bewildered. Specifically Prabhupada's knowledge we want. He's our Shiksha Guru for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Kandacharya Shiksha Guru. He'll be there all the time. So we want his knowledge. He's bringing out the purport. Yeah, just like in the verse, it says, these great sages, they know everything past, present, and future. So what to speak of, but still they don't know Krishna. So what to speak of someone who knows Krishna like Prabhupada? That means automatically he knows all the knowledge, plus he's got all the knowledge of relationship with Krishna. So that a pure devotee can give you, that Prabhupada is bringing out his purport. All the other aspects of knowledge and other books and things, they'll be touching on something, but they don't actually bring out the real purpose. So Prabhupada's bringing out the real purpose. This is Prabhupada's purport. He's bringing out a knowledge of relationship with Krishna. This is the purpose of Bhagavad Gita, to understand one's relationship with Krishna. But you read the Bhagavad Gita, there's so many branches of knowledge and different aspects. But when we read Prabhupada's Gita, say, then on every purple Prabhupada makes it clear Krishna is the Supreme Person of Godhead. He puts it on every page, so and you are the eternal servant of Krishna. And you are, it's there on it all the time, so he brings it out all the way. Whatever Krishna's speaking about, Kama Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Prabhupada always brings out pure devotional service in the purple, because he knows the meaning. So only devotee can actually present, others they cannot. So you become bewildered by getting so much knowledge. Unless you take shelter of a lotus feet of a devotee of Krishna, then you won't be bewildered. Vidyanagara is one of the places in Madhyamadri. Anyway. From there all knowledge comes. Vidya Naga. Vidya means knowledge. Naga means the village or the place. All the knowledge is coming from there. All the six systems of philosophy, those sages have their seat there and they propound the philosophies, Kapila, Kama Mansa philosophy of Jaimini, and Shankya philosophy of Kapila, Veda Vyasa is compiling the Vedas there, and all the branches of knowledge. And it all comes from that place. So Jiva Goswami asked in Chananda Prabhu, then how come, you know, this knowledge here, like Naya philosophy of, you know, Naya, what's it called? Logic, and different propounders of different philosophies, Jaimini, it's an atheistic philosophy. Why are these here? If knowledge is inauspicious and logic is inauspicious, why does it have its place here in Navadvipam? And Nityananda must know, it's never inauspicious. It's only when it's misused it becomes inauspicious. But when knowledge is used to reveal bhakti, to reveal the high position of bhakti above everything else, He said, then it becomes auspicious. But if it's not used properly, then it remains inauspicious. It keeps around. So therefore, you have to hear, when we hear from Prabhupada, we're not going to become bewildered. Because he knows the purpose of it. This Prabhupada's saying, the whole purpose, this picture of the universe has just been spoken of him. But in Prabhupada's purport, he's brought out the essence. They don't know their relationship with Krishna. They're all bewildered. Even though they've got the topmost positions, they're all bewildered. In as much as they don't know their relationship with Krishna. So Prabhupada knows how to bring the essence. So knowledge we have to get from a devotee, otherwise. Humility, Prabhupada says, you become humble by practicing. Being humble. Put it into practice. Even if you don't feel like being humble, put it into practice sometimes in relation. And then you'll develop a natural attitude of humility. Okay.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the class. So if you're used to austerity and knowledge and that's what you know, then how do you make that transition into from this dry stuff?
We keep the goal in mind. As I said, Prabhupada put Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every page, so you can't go far wrong in Prabhupada's books. He always keeps you on track. But sometimes we're practicing knowledge and detachment. On the path of transcendence, you get the jnanis, yogis, bhaktas. And more or less, they're the same up to the point of liberation. It's the same things we're doing. They're gathering knowledge, they're becoming renounced, they're performing austerities. So to get to the point of liberation, to get out of the material, modes of material nature, these transcendental paths are more or less all the same. The jnanis, the yogis, kama yogis also. They're following a process to get free from but if you associate with jnanis or you associate with just yogis, then you'll get stuck on that point. But if you associate with devotees, they'll take you beyond that. They'll tell you what the real purpose of your austerity is for, what the real purpose of your knowledge is for, what the real purpose of learning is for. It's to go beyond and understand your relationship with Krishna and engage in that relationship. Whereas the karmas, the jnanis and the yogis, they're following transcendental paths. They come to that point of above the modes of material nature, they get their liberation. But then they stop at that point. They don't have the information to go further because they haven't had association with devotee. And it's only by association with devotee then they can actually develop the desire to go further. So when they get stuck, then they're called a karma yogi or a jnani yogi. But up until that time, the devotees are more or less also doing austerity. They're always studying knowledge rule. So it's very similar to the point of liberation. But there they stop. And devotee, he says, Krishna Das Kaviraj says, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that that's the goal, moksha for the transcendentalists. When they achieve that, that's it. Our process of jnana is finished. Our process of austerity is finished. Our process of studying Veda is finished. All of our processes are finished because we got the goal. Now we're Brahma Bhuta Prashna. We've understood our identity as a Brahman. So they say our business is finished, it stops here. Krishna Das Kaviraj said, for the devotee, when he reaches that platform, he says, now our business is beginning. This is the beginning of our business. Because now we have spiritual connection. We're realizing now who we are, and relationship is there. So he said, now the service really begins, it's being done with feeling. Now the hearing really begins. Now the service really begins because everything is being done with feeling on the spiritual platform. But the jnanis and yogis, they don't have this conception of spiritual activities which constitute bhakti, but they're just interested in the bliss of Brahman, so Krishna gives them that. So we always have to keep the goal in mind, you know. That's why we always associate with devotees, otherwise we'll get bewildered. I was in Hrishikesh last year. Every building practically is an ashram there, apart from the established big ashrams, but every building and house, some kind of yoga group, some kind of, they all got different ways. Hundreds and hundreds. All kinds of different ways and processes. But hardly you find one bhakta there. They're practicing, but more or less everyone's bewildered. So it's so important to associate with devotees, hear from devotees, and read the literatures of the great Vaishnava. You won't be bewildered. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Prabhupada ki.